joining us here, having a conversation. I'm sitting down with author Kristen Phillips. Hello.
Kia ora, Catherine. Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is our pleasure. I'm going to talk to you today about a few things, but one of them is about your gorgeous dad. You've written a book about part of his life, a story towards the end of his life, and the title of the book is Dad, You've Got Dementia.
Yes.
So there is the clue to the conversation that we're having today. And we're linking it in because this month is World Alzheimer's Awareness
Yep,
Month.
The whole of September, and September the 21st is World Alzheimer's Day.
Okay. Alzheimer's and dementia. You have been personally touched by it. Can you give me an understanding of what the difference is? Is there one that the general public need to know about? Did you have that question yourself when your father was diagnosed?
Between Alzheimer's and dementia?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dementia, I have some basic knowledge. I'm not a health professional, mm-hmm. but basic knowledge is that dementia is an umbrella term for all different types of dementia. So Alzheimer's is the most common mm-hmm. type. And then there's vascular dementia. It's very common. Lewy bodies, but my understanding is that there are hundreds of different types. So my dad had a combination, Don, he had a combination of Alzheimer's and vascular. He'd had heart problems in his life. So
oh, I see.
That was connected to his dementia.
When was your father diagnosed?
It's a really good question. It's quite hard to get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
And although he had the signs from 2009, I would say. So he had 2009, he died in 2019, mm-hmm. and that's very typical, 8 to 10 years
okay.
for the progression of dementia.
Yeah,
he actually didn't get a diagnosis till 2016.
That's really a yeah. big difference in time.
It's a thing. It's a thing around the stigma that's around. It's quite hard sometimes to get a diagnosis, but it's very important because it can open up doors. Once you get a diagnosis of dementia, that opens doors for support that you can get. But some GPs are reluctant because of the stigma. Some people don't want a diagnosis. And it can be hard to diagnose because there are other factors that could be causing repetition or whatever the behaviours are.
So it could be people are just, oh, it's old age. Or Well, how old was your father in 2009? Can you do the math on that?
The maths.
That's a test.
On the top of my head, yeah. So he was born in 1935. He was died in 2019, so he was 84.
Okay.
Yeah, so he would have been 74.
Which is pretty young, really.
There is something called younger onset dementia and you're under 65. And sadly,
that's really young.
That's becoming more common, under 65, that diagnosis. Yeah, but if you're over 65, yeah, as you get older, your risk increases.
Okay. So I guess at 74... you wouldn't really say, oh, you're just getting older. So where was the stigma? Was it from the medical profession, or was it from your father ignoring some of the signs?
Dad was great. He was very open and he accepted that his mind wasn't working so well. So he was with it and he tried to manage it. That was what he was like as a person. So he faced it. I think the stigma comes more from other people around the person who's got dementia. So mum and dad had a very social life, very active in their church. And the other thing is that there's kind of, just for ease, there's three stages of dementia, early, mid and late. So in the early stage, which can be 4 to 5 years, you don't notice so much. Maybe the odd, forgetting the odd thing, but the person is still kind of physically active, can still do things, just... But then when you start getting to mid-stage, late-stage, it's much more noticeable. But it's more other people who find it hard to deal with how the person that they knew who could answer a simple question, how they're suddenly not remembering things, not remembering names. So what happened to mum and dad was their social circle shrunk. 'Cause people,
oh, that's sad.
So that's what I see as a kind of a stigma that comes with dementia.
Yeah.
And that's just about knowing how to be with someone who's got dementia. It's, yeah.
You have to go on a little bit of an adventure yourself to find out a bit about it. Our family at the moment has someone who has dementia, and everyone is dealing with it in a different way and in their own way at a different pace. Some people don't want to know particularly about it and just prefer to get a bit angry, and then others are hitting the books and trying to find out as much as they can. Was that your experience?
That's so brilliant. That was one thing I learnt from my experience. I had an expectation that everyone would be on the same page, mm-hmm. but I actually think that's more the reality, that when someone in a whānau gets dementia, everyone's going to have a different way of dealing with that. In a way, it's a different way of grieving.
Yeah.
So I think that's exactly typical. I would say that's generally what happens. I talked to lots of people in the, Dad was in Bob Scott Retirement Village from 2017 till he died in 2019. And I saw families, I saw the ones where the siblings would turn up week in, day out, and then there'd be the other one that kind of made an appearance every 4 months or didn't come at all.
Oh, so that's heartbreaking.
But it's, yeah. But it's okay, actually, yeah. Because I think what I realise is that we just need to let everyone grieve and deal with it. Some people don't want to remember their parent as having dementia, so they don't want to.
Mm.
So I think it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And it's okay, because just let everyone grieve as they need to grieve. And the people that want to get involved, then they're the ones that can provide the good support for the person.
So you mentioned that he was diagnosed fairly late. Is that with the tests that they have, you know, trying to draw the clock and trying to do all sorts of, you know, what's the, try and remember five things, or the test that we're also terrified that we might fail ourselves, which, yeah. by the way, you can go and do yourself online.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think it had to do with, because I lived in London, so when we first realised he had dementia, I was in London from 2009. I started visiting annually in 2014-15 and came every year for about a month, but it was somewhere around that time, and I think it was to do with a change of doctor. So when he got the new doctor, there was the diagnosis.
I see.
It was something to do with the original GP just not being onto it or wanting to make that diagnosis.
Wow. Okay, that's tricky. So the time then that he was diagnosed until he went into a home, you still had your mother with you?
Yeah, my mum looked after him, and I mention her in the book. I say, thanks, Mum, for doing the hard yards. She was in her 70s, early 80s, and it was 24/7. It was very tough on her, particularly towards the end. It wasn't what they hoped for. You know, they wanted to have a nice pottery retirement and just not wake up one day and there suddenly she's dealing with Dad, who was getting up a lot in the night and forgetting things and not being able to do the usual things he did around the house. It was very tough.
So you've written this book about your father and, Dad, you've got dementia. Did you have that conversation with him? How did you?
I could read it to you.
I'll read this to you. Yeah, please do.
The whole point of the book is that in my experience of my dad was he was still there. He was still there trying to communicate. It wasn't the same in the same way as he was before he had dementia, but he was saying some important things and some interesting things. So I wanted to share that. And also writing down those things, it was a way of being with my grief, you know, like writing it down. It's sort of like a way of remembering him. So, you know, I'm very delighted it's got into a book. And that is helping other people. But I would have done it anyway. I would have written it down. But let me just read, because so first he went into Shona McFarlane, so before he got moved to Bob Scott. So I'll just read you a little bit, and it's all about how this the book kind of comes about.
I love it. Great. Yeah.
Shona McFarlane Residential Care Unit, Te Awa Kairangi, Lower Hutt, 2016. I call on the landline from London and ask that Dad be given a quiet space to sit. Hello, Kristen. Hello, Dad. That's a nice strong voice, lovely to hear you. What time is it? I tell him, yay, lovely to hear from you. What's happening for you in your life? A cousin of Mia's, I just need to say here, Mia is my partner, a cousin of Mia's died on Boxing Day, suddenly, unexpected. That is sadness. What happened? Was she depressed? I don't know. It is tragic. Indeed, my dear, you sound as clear as a bell. You sound as clear as a bell as well. Did she have a good life? Yes, she really lived. How are you feeling? Clear yes, chesty no. I'm slowing down, not quick on the uptake. Here I am in the Hutt Hospital. I've got the waiting room to myself. We have a problem with our hot water cylinder, Dad. There's no hot water. That's a basic problem. Is it like a Kiwi can do it yourself culture? I can't remember the British culture. Are there no friends that could do it for you? All the workings are secret. I'm very flattered that you are ringing from the other side of the world. I'm hearing you and sitting in lovely splendour by the cake. Don't eat it, Dad. We love. I'm going to write a book about our conversations. Really? You could call it Conversations with My Father. What a good title. I hope I never let you down. No, Dad, never. The cake is just sitting on the table. I've never known you to say no to cake. We laugh.
So this is fairly well into his dementia.
Yeah, I would say medium to late stage. You know, he still could talk. He was mobile. He just wasn't. It was sadly, mum couldn't look after him at that point, so he needed to be in care.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she did a spectacular job for about 6 years, which is longer than most.
Yeah, that is a long time. Do they keep people perhaps at home as long as they can when there is a partner?
Yeah, I mean, the whole key is to try to manage it and give everyone respite. So give the person going into respite care gets a change of scene, gets different stimulation, and it also gives the person who's caring and supporting a break. That needs to start earlier than it usually does. That's a real key thing.
Don't wait till you're absolutely exhausted.
Burnt out. Don't wait till then. Yeah.
Because it's fairly easy, from my observation, for people to get quite angry with the patient, which is very unfair on them.
Yeah.
And they're really not angry with that person. They're like, where did that person go?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And why aren't you understanding what I'm saying? What I'm saying is very simple. Why are you not getting it?
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Yeah, I see that as grief. It's just the frustration and the grief of losing who that person was. But as the book says, it's not just about what's lost, but what is there still to find. So that's again where the book's coming from, is that, yeah, my dad couldn't always remember my name.
Mm.
I had to let go of that, you know. He couldn't always ask me about our shared history together. So we couldn't have those conversations, but there were still things and ways of connecting. And, yeah, there are lots of books about how hard it is, and this book is about how hard it is as well.
Mm.
But there are also moments of connection. And that was my thing. When you asked before about different family members, as a family member, I just thought, I want to see how I can stay connected with my dad through this.
When you say that he didn't remember your name, did he remember you though?
Yeah, he had ways of showing that. Usually it was an expression on his face. So if I walked into the unit, he would sort of face would, oh, it's you. But it was like it was me every time. You know, it was like, oh, it's you again. So it wasn't like, oh, where did you come from? You know, so it was very in the moment, you know.
Okay.
And then there were lots of little punches on the arm and sort of smiles. And then
is that when he couldn't verbalise?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the last 6 months, he didn't have hardly any language. So it was all a lot of looking, a lot of just being together, sitting next to each other with our arms resting. I used to do a little thing, massages, earlobes, you know, things, you know, we'd listen to music together. So it was it's a very special time in my life, actually, because it was the only place I wanted to be.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be with him. So lots of memories, and many of which I've put in the book, about just being together and having connection and, yeah.
So you moved back from the UK to spend more time with your father, is that what happened?
Yeah, we decided after 2018 visit, we'd stayed for the month. We were leaving. It was one of the hardest times of leaving I'd ever had, because I didn't know if I would see him alive again. It's always like that when you live far away. As you get older, you think, am I going to see my parents again? But was very hard, and I went back to work and I spoke with my manager and I said, maybe I could take 3 months. She said, Kristen, take a year. She's a fantastic manager.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was amazing. So I'd been in my job for a long time. I took leave without pay. Mia was able to get leave without pay, and we just came over, and it was just exactly where I wanted to be.
And so that wasn't very long before he passed.
Yeah, we arrived in January, and then he passed in July. So, and that was, it meant actually time to grieve after he died. I think dementia, you start grieving quite early. once you know it's coming.
You're starting to let them go a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're kind of losing parts of them, and there's a lot of loss, very slow.
Yeah.
But then there was time after he died to just be around where he had been living, to be where he grew up, and I was really grateful for that time. Not too much pressure, not too much work. So, yeah.
When you came back, so you were talking about he didn't know your name, but he knew you. Were you finding that when you were having conversations with him when you were still in the UK, or was this happening when you got back?
That was mainly when I got back, okay. So late stage.
Right.
So when I left in 2018, he was still feeding himself, but the conversations on the phone, when I was talking to him on the phone, they were just starting to get, and I've put them in the book, you can just see that it wasn't as sort of flowing, like the one I just read, that was quite a, kind of made sense, you know, but towards the end, he was saying things like, hey, Kristen, are you flying any fish in London? And I was going, yeah, Dad, I'm flying lots of fish. Because the whole idea was to not say, what do you mean flying fish? Because that would have just shut him down.
Yeah.
And I kind of know what he meant when he said, are you flying lots of fish? I can kind of, you know, is it going okay?
Yeah.
Are you catching fish? Are you, you know, I can do something with that.
Hey, so, we've all mixed metaphors.
Yeah, it's a mixed metaphor, and I just... So we just would have these little, but there was always like, love you, and he'd go, love you, so, you know.
Yeah. Did you learn anything about yourself, do you think, during this process?
That's a really interesting question. I learned that I was capable of more than I thought I would be, because I knew where it was heading, and I didn't know. You can't go through an experience like that of seeing a parent heading towards dying. I remember thinking, I don't know what this is going to be like, and I don't know if I'm up for it. I don't know how I'm going to get through it. But it's amazing that you have the strength when you have. I found I got what I needed when I needed it.
Mm.
I didn't feel like I could do it if I looked ahead, but. Yeah, so that was one thing. And I did learn something. I learned that I was waiting for some other people to do some stuff, and then I thought, I can do this. So I had ideas about how relatives could support each other in care, in the care environment.
Okay.
And I was waiting for someone to start a group, and then I just started a group. And there were a couple of us, and we just used to meet together, talk about what it was like. And we really, there were just three or four of us, and we managed to really... make a difference for that year anyway in the unit. We ran concerts. We made suggestions to the staff about how they could make it easier for relatives. So that was good. I thought, I had this idea and I thought, someone else will do it. I thought, no, you do it.
It sounds to me like you found some sort of empowerment through it, that you found some strength that maybe you didn't have. I mean, you seem to be a very strong, capable person, but it is amazing what you... don't think of yourself until you put through that sort of situation.
That's right. Yeah.
Is that support group or that those suggestions that you made to staff, were they welcomely received?
Mixed.
Okay.
Mixed.
Yeah.
But it just broke some ground, I think. And I really think that with the pressure that's on the health services at the moment, I think this idea of shared care and what relatives can bring. We want to feel that we're collaborating with the carers. They're doing it. I'm so grateful. I always want to say thank you to all the people working in all the care homes who do all those jobs on behalf of whanau, who are just so tough, and they do it day in, day out with a lot of grace, you know, the majority of them.
Yeah.
And I mean the vast majority. I know there's always some.
We're all human. Bad eggs. Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just saw people in there really caring for my dad day in, day out. And that meant I could just be with him. So, but the thing was, as a relative, I knew some stuff that they didn't know and I could contribute to his care.
Okay.
So that's the idea of shared care. I knew that my dad liked a handkerchief in his pocket. So when he put his hand in his pocket and there wasn't a handkerchief and he's got a runny nose, I could say to the carer, hey, would you mind putting a handkerchief in his pocket when you dress him in the morning? She did that. She said to me, hey, I did the handkerchief. And I said, yeah, and he's got, you know, it was just like a win-win-win.
Yes.
She felt job satisfaction. Dad could blow his nose. I felt like I contributed to my dad's care. The other thing I did was occasionally, not very often, but I made my dad's bed.
Yeah.
The carer had to make 10 beds every morning.
Yes.
I'm making my dad's bed, and she gets to make, or he gets to make 9 beds. So there were little things that I could do in partnership, and it just felt good. You know, it felt like we were all, we both cared about the person, the resident, the parent. Yeah.
So once your father went into care, then it didn't feel like you certainly were not deserting him. He was going to somewhere where he needed to be for the care. And then you could continue on providing that love and support for your father.
Yeah, and less stress for all of us as a whānau, as a family, because we're not worrying about mum, we're not worrying about him at home. So it was the right, you know, at a certain point it was very right that he was in care. And that's always we were talking about that before, that's always a decision that's best made in advance. It's good if you've got a kind of idea about your person with dementia, about when might be an optimal time for them to go in care. And there are some good stories out there about people who planned ahead and got the person in at a good time.
Yeah.
And then you can get into crisis situations, and that's a bit harder for everybody.
How did you find that process of getting your father into care?
Well,
was that difficult to navigate? Or?
Yeah, I wasn't directly involved in it because I was in London at the time. So he went in at the end of 16. I mean, I was having my own stress about that because it was him leaving home.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, but I wasn't involved particularly in the direct managing of that.
What I would love, Kristen, if you could read another piece out of your book.
Sure.
I would really appreciate it. I think the listeners would enjoy it too.
I'll just tell you a little bit about the book. It's very short. It's kind of poetic. Charity Norman, she's written a really great book called Remember Me, which is a mystery novel that's got a character with dementia in it. She says it's lyrical, honest, unfailingly loving, a portrait of the power of connection, even when there are no more words. Oh. So the first part of the book, there are words because Dad could talk, but in the second part of the book, that's the January to July period that we were talking about, where he was in Bob Scott Retirement Village. So I'll just read you this little piece about some of the stuff, the things that can happen. It's called Hide and Seek. So this is in 2019. During a visit at the unit, one of the carers tells me a story from 2018. I'm so grateful, as stories like these are what I've missed by being away. Dad had been walking up and down the corridors, and then no one could find him. The carer went looking for him, calling, "Where's Don Phillips? Where's Don Phillips?" There was no response. Others joined her until there were 3 people looking, opening doors and calling his name, the worry being that somehow he had managed to get out of the unit. After 20 minutes or so, the carer was at the end of a corridor when she heard a sing-song voice. "He's in here. He's in here." She went into one of the end rooms, looked behind the door, where she found Dad laughing and looking very pleased with himself. I know. It's just
oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, so that really is.
Playful.
Very playful. That reminds me of something you mentioned before about no words. I have a member of the family at the moment who, though I'd say they're in mid to late stages of dementia.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, her facial expressions, they tell a story. She will make faces behind someone. If someone is She knows as well when someone is upset with her, but she cannot express it back. But she'll pull a face at me or do some sort of finger indication.
Gesture, yes.
She knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And it just makes me, I laugh with her. I certainly do not laugh at her. But we have a wonderful conversation without even speaking, just by her facial expressions and these kind of childlike naughtiness that goes on. It's actually quite a relief that they have this fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dad, that's the thing with what's happening in the brain, I think, is that that filter's come off.
Mm.
So there's a couple of instances like that in the book, either eye contact or one of my favourite, well, it's not one of my favourite, but this, where my dad said to my uncle, who has quite a, he was a little bit rotund, put it that way,
yeah.
And he just said, "You haven't changed much since the last time, have you?" And I was like, oh my goodness. But just nothing bad intended, you know, just no filter, but actually quite refreshing.
Yeah.
I think these are some of the kind of gifts that people with dementia. And my dad said just some beautiful, poetic things. Like he said, "I'm not where other people's memories are. I'm not where other people's memories are." Which is just, I have to keep thinking about it.
Yeah, that's really deep.
It's deep, but it's what he was feeling, you know. And then maybe more humorously, he said, "I feel confused."
Confused.
That should be a thing in the dictionary, right? I think
let's use that word.
I know.
Because it really it shows you what confused is if you're confused.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'll just finish. This is beautiful. "The things I remember, I can't recall." That's like dementia, isn't it?
That's
the
dementia.
"The things I remember." But we've all had those moments.
Yes.
I know that. I can't recall it. "The things I remember, I can't recall." So this is partly why I wrote the book, because here was a person with dementia saying these profound things.
Mm.
And, yeah.
That makes it very easy to understand. That should be the cry for dementia. "The things I remember, I can't recall."
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've got some dates for us or where people can get some further information on dementia?
Yeah, so my other hat, so I've written this book, but I'm also the office manager at Dementia Wellington, and we cover Wellington, the Hutt Valley, and the Kapiti Coast. And on September the 21st at the Paraparaumu Golf Club, which is also World Alzheimer's Day, so we do a lot over September, we're holding something called Carers Big Day Out. I'm sure especially listeners on the Kapiti Coast will have been to the Paraparaumu Golf Club. Beautiful, beautiful.
Yes, lovely.
It really is. So the idea for the day is that people who are supporting someone with dementia, that's including you actually, you could come.
Oh, I might go.
Carers Day Out. Yeah, you could come. They come along and it's all free. So you just need to know that you're coming, but there's no charge. It's on us. And it's just a day of nourishment, rest, relaxation, nice food, nice view. And to give you an idea, some of the things that will be happening will be a very informal chat about sleep and how to manage sleep. There'll be voice arts, which is kind of drama, voice, kind of fun thing to do together. There's a meditation. Someone's going to lead some meditation. And that's actually Rachel Tobin from Mindfulness. I can't remember her. Sorry, I can't remember her website, but Rachel Tobin. But she's based up here. So it's just going to be a very relaxing day. And if you don't want to do that and just want to go for a walk along the beach, that's fine. Putting at lunchtime. So just, if anyone would like to come to that, just email admin@dementiawellington.org.nz. It'd be lovely to see you there, free. And the other thing is that I'm going to be doing a reading and a QA at Charles Fleming on Friday, October the 27th, just before afternoon tea. So I'm assuming that'll be around 2 p.m. I haven't got the exact time. And that'll be in the downstairs lounge. So if you've got someone in Charles Fleming, please come along, bring them along as well.
Marvellous.
I'll be reading from the book and doing a Q&A.
Kristen, before you go, I just want to give your lovely book, which I really like the size of it too, and it's a beautiful colour. It's a really nicely presented book. It is published by the Cuba Press, which are from Wellington. Fantastic.
Yep.
And where can people purchase your book from?
So the best thing to do is to probably go to an independent bookshop and request it if they haven't got it in,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be able to get it in quite easily for you if you would like to buy it. It's at the library. And you can also order it direct from the Cuba Press and they'll post it out to you. I think it's on Mighty Ape as well.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
So it's a few different places.
All right. Yeah. And if you get stuck with that, you can also have a look at Kristen's website. It's Kristen with a K, K-R-I-S-T-E-N, Phillips, two L's, P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S, author.com. And it's Dad, You've Got Dementia.
Thank you, Catherine. It's been great to be here today. Thank you. Thank you.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.